The show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. Thank you and Agnes for producing the show out there in West Virginia. How is doing, everybody? How is everything out there? It's a beautiful day out here in lovely, wonderful Decatur, Georgia, land of the free and home of the Braves. We're playing now. I was watching the game before the show. How's everybody doing tonight? Before I begin, I got a couple of quick notes. First, I want to wish a happy birthday to my father and his wife, my stepmother, Evelyn. My father is 85 years old today. He was born in 1921. You know, he used to talk about the Depression a lot because he grew up in the Depression. And he used to tell me that nowadays is, in some cases, a lot worse than the Depression was, because during the Depression, when you had a job, even though jobs were hard to find, you could at least support yourself. If you had a full-time job somewhere, you could support yourself and your family. Nowadays, you really can't do that. A full-time job doesn't really cover everything. And also, my stepmom, Evelyn, my biological mom, passed away about 20-something years ago, and my dad remarried about, I guess, about 5 years after that. And Evelyn's a very nice lady. She's from the Philippines, and she has two young sons. Well, actually, they're not young now. They're both career people, college graduates and all that, and they're nice, and I'm glad they're a part of my family. So happy birthday to Dad and Evelyn. That's really weird that they have the same birthday, because my wife Kathy and I, my late wife, she and I also had the same birthday. We're on November 15th. And what's even weirder is that one of my wife's sisters and my sister also have the same birthday, in September. So, you know, it's one of those little Twilight Zone things going on. There were a couple of people I neglected to thank last week, and I just want to get that out of the way right now. I want to thank my friend Julius from the Netherlands. And for those of you who listen to the Cup of Joe reports on my blog, or hear them on the head-on radio show with Bob Kincaid. Hi, Bob. Those shows are put on a server that's run by my friend Julius out in the Netherlands. That's in the Netherlands, man. That's on the other side of the world, practically. And that's what I love about the Internet, how all this international stuff gets going on. It's really important to me, because I really do view us as a true global community, and I think the Internet is a great way of bringing that forward. And he's the one, he donated the server space for me to use to put the Cup of Joe reports up there, and I'm really, really happy for him to have done that, because, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with how a lot of this stuff works, server space can get a little pricey, especially when you're saving audio files. Excuse me. Some of you might have noticed in the last couple of days, by the way, that the quality of the audio file is a little bit better because I'm saving it at a higher bit rate. Yeah, I know. It's boring technical stuff. Who cares? I don't know. It's just I wanted it to sound a little bit better, and I know it's harder for the dial-up people to stream, but that's okay, I think. I'm sorry. When you get the DSL, get DSL. What can I say? And also, one more person I want to thank that I didn't get a chance to thank was Joey Davis. Joey Davis was my former partner, those of you who remember me back in my days in the Joey JoJo show. And he was the one who really got me into doing radio. He showed me how to set up the audio program and use a mixer and run everything right. So even though he and I have kind of had a falling out, and that's all I'm going to say about that, I still appreciate what he did for me in that, because he really showed me how to get things going, and he gave me the incentive to move on to my own show. So anyway, that's taken care of. Phyllis isn't here. Phyllis isn't here right now. She probably will be on a little later on. She had a date, and that's one of the drawbacks of doing a show on a Saturday night, though she may drop in a little later. I did talk to her about being a regular co-host, and she'll do that as her schedule permits, and she was very happy to do that. She likes being here, and I like having her here. I like having somebody in the studio with me. I did have a guest schedule tonight. Unfortunately, she had to back out at the last minute for a family emergency. That was Mary Scott O'Connor of MyLeftWing.com, and it's kind of a shame because she had there was a front page article about her and about the angry left, and I'm going to get into that a little later. But that was on the Washington Post today. So, and of course, she's She's been a regular guest on Fox News and on the John Gibson Show, Fox Radio. So I was happy to have her on, but she had, like I said, a minor family emergency. Nothing real serious, but serious enough to keep her away. So, but we'll have her on next week. I spoke to her earlier today on the phone, and she wants to do it. It's just, you know, stuff happens. Life happens. What was it that John Lennon said? Life is what happens when you're making other plans, and that's what happened there. Let's see what's going on. Hey, it's tax time again. Today's tax day, April 15th. And as I mentioned on Friday's Cup of Joe report, and I want to remind you, by the way, that in addition to hearing the report on Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid every evening, you can also stream it and read the transcript from my website, and that's cupojoe.blogspot.com. But anyway, as I said, it's tax time again, and I hope you all filled out your forms and sent them in. I hope you made out your check if you wound up having to pay. I hope you made your check out to United States Treasury, not the IRS. A lot of people do that. They think that the IRS is the one that gets the money. The IRS doesn't get a penny of that. It all goes to the directly to the United States Treasury. And spell it out. Don't put U.S. Treasury or Department of the Treasury abbreviated. Just write out, write out United States Treasury. Now, some of you know that I'm currently working processing tax forms here in Atlanta, and while I'm not allowed to discuss any specific details of what it is that I do, I can say it's pretty enjoyable work, and it's nice to be back working on a regular schedule. I had been unemployed for a long time. For those of you who don't know, haven't listened to my show for a while, or haven't listened to the show ever, first-time listeners, I was unemployed for the most part of 2005. I got laid off at the end of the year 2004, right around Christmas, actually, from a manufacturing job that's moved to Mexico, which is something a lot of people are having experience with these days. And because of my wife's illness, I was really unable to go to work for the most part in 2005. My wife had passed away in September, and you know, it took a while after that for me to get over that. I'm still kind of getting over it, but the point is I hadn't worked for a very long time. So it's hard for me to get back on any kind of regular schedule. But it's nice doing that. But the bad thing is that having to work for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, takes me away from the work that I really want to do, which is the reports and, of course, the radio show. And obviously I'd like to do this a little more often. I've gotten nothing but positive feedback from all of you, and I want to thank everybody for the emails and the chat room messages and everything that I've gotten. And I'm grateful for that because, you know, when someone throws themselves out into the public arena like I'm doing, and as all of us are doing here at the Head On Network, you like to know that the work you do is appreciated. And I really do appreciate the kind words that everybody had for me on the first show. Didn't go as smoothly as I'd like, although other people said it went fairly smoothly. I have too many brain farts. Some of that is just caused by distractions. I'm still not used to being able to talk and have to pay attention to stuff in chat rooms or some instructions that I'm getting from producers, and I'm not even used to having producers, you know. And I'm very happy for Bob and Agnes running the show, as I've said earlier. It's really nice too. That makes me feel like I'm really doing a professional thing here. But you know, if you believe in what I'm doing, if you like what's going on, not just with me, but for the Head On Radio Network in general, then I urge you to come to my site, cupojoe.blogspot.com. Drop a few dollars in the bucket if you can. I really don't like asking for money, but it is necessary. And, in fact, I'm still looking for some more subscribers, people who will donate a set amount of money every month. This way I know I always have at least something coming in. This is important. This is important, and I don't mean to sound like I'm just wanting to be lazy and sit in my butt and get other people's money, but what I need to do the show right is time. And if I have to spend 40 to 60 hours a week away from the studio at a job, it does take away from what I can do here. In time, I'd like to do this show daily. In fact, I was going to talk to Ben Birch about this, the White Rose Society. And by the way, whiterosesociety.org is kind of the sponsor of the Head On Network. We're all kind of in the White Rose family. And I spoke to him, and what I really would like to do is have that 4 to 7 time slot just before Bob Kincaid's Head On Radio every evening, which is on every evening at 7 to 10. You can listen right here on the Head On Radio Network. But right now, having to work a daily show is pretty much out of the question. I can do what I do on the weekends, because I can spend for the most part Saturday getting myself together and all that stuff, lining up. Now, there will come a time, when none of that will be necessary. Hopefully in the future, some deep pockets person on the left will invest in Head On Radio. But in the meantime, we do need all the support we can get. Head On Radio is an important step for reclaiming the airwaves from the corporate media, and that's whether you're talking about the corporate right or the corporate left, okay? Okay. Anyway, where was I? Okay, I do want to continue for a little while the story that Phyllis and I were talking about last week about Representative Cynthia McKinney, who, for those of you who don't know, I live in her district. She is my representative. Now, some of you know Ms. McKinney was involved in an incident with the Capitol Police where she was apparently grabbed by an officer, and she responded. She has since apologized for it, but a lot of that was just under pressure from Democratic leaders, of all people. The cops claimed that because of a new hairdo, they didn't recognize her, and I'm calling BS on that. Because the truth is that, one, their job is to recognize congresspeople, and two, Cynthia McKinney in particular is well known by the cops there. This was not the first incident she's had with them, although this, I think, is the first one that actually got physical. Don't believe the cops there when they say that they don't know who she is. They know damn well who she is. Okay? And they don't like them uppity types. I have it on Carol of the Sideshow, and the link for that is a little complicated. Just go on my site, cupofjoe.blogspot.com, and click on the Sideshow link. It's a very, very good website. And she's been on this story, and as usual, she's dead on right. Let me read this to you from her site. She wrote, California Representative Tom Lantos, according to the web reference site Wikipedia, ran over a teenager in the Capitol parking area and refused to stop despite screams from the crowd. He never apologized for the hit and run either. The Boston Globe reported that Lantos wasn't even charged with a hit and run, but was only fined $25 for failure to pay full time and attention. However, a teacher accompanying the student was threatened with arrest by Capitol Police when she chased Lantos' car, demanding that he stop. So apparently, Capitol Police are quite zealous in protecting their lawmakers if they're white. But, you know, what's upsetting Avedon, and what upsets me, is that there's been a lot of criticism from her from blacks as well. And again, from the Sideshow, there's a quote from what she calls an otherwise inane anti-McKinney article by black columnist Earl Ofari Hutchinson, where he says, in past years, the Congressional Black Caucus raised heck when a white Republican congressman punched a black Capitol police officer, and a year later, Ohio Democratic Representative Lewis Stokes was hassled by Capitol Police, and the Congressional Black Caucus rushed to their defense. Not this time, according to Avedon, not for Cynthia McKinney. The Congressional Black Caucus is broken, and clearly they've been broken by the efforts of Democrats who just want black activists to shut up. And I see a lot of that, and it's unfortunate, because this is what, you know, when I talk about the corporate left, the leadership of the Democratic Party represents the corporate left. They're the kind, they're kind of, I call them the Weimar left here, because they want to just want to keep quiet and, you know, hope everything will die down, and they don't realize everything's not going to die down. They need to stand up for their black brothers and sisters, because we're all part of the same family here. And I think it's just one facet of a much larger issue with Democrats who are simply afraid to stand up and fight. But what they're afraid of, I have no idea. This is something that Governor Howard Dean pointed out, that the problem with the Democratic leadership is that they're not worried about dealing with the issues of the country and fighting for what they believe is right. They're worried about them hanging on to their own positions. Right now, they are number two, and they want to hang on to being number two. And uppity blacks like Cynthia McKinney make that more difficult. Cynthia's gone, you know, has said a couple of things that are controversial, but you know what? I've never heard her say anything that's as crazy or as ridiculous as the things that come daily out of the mouths of Mr. Bush, Mr. Rumsfeld, and Mr. Rove, and all these people in the administration. So, and don't get me started on Colin Powell and Condi Rice. These people are house slaves. Harry Belafonte was right. The Republicans use people like that to pretend they're inclusive. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with more on the Head On Radio Network.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving.
Mm.
And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. In case you're just joining us, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the phone number to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And again, I want to invite everyone to join us in the Head On chat room. Just go to www.headonradionetwork.com and click on the chat room link, and you can be there with all our friends. I would be there myself, except that my computer right now can't handle doing that with the JavaScript. I also, with what I was trying to do last week, I was trying to keep track of what was going on in multiple chat rooms, and it's really too much to try to keep track of at one time while I'm trying to do show. excuse me. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have a cough button or anything. As I was mentioning earlier, I do work processing forms for the IRS. And again, I really can't talk about specifically what I do, but there was something that went on there, something that's been going on a couple of times. I work with a lot of, mostly I work with black people. I think there's maybe 5% white people there, and most of them are women. So, you know, I'm kind of sort of out of it, because I really don't have, you know, it's nothing I have anything against people. It's just that I don't have a lot of common with them. They're, you know, very, very, very much more working class than I am. I'm a working class guy, but I'm different. Like I say, I'm the working man's thinking man, and I have a very, very different outlook. And there were a couple of nice ladies who were working in the area that I was working in, and the time came for them to take a break. And for all of us in our area to take a break, and they didn't want to go. They wanted to keep working. Now, the thing about this is, when you're working a job for, well, it's not for the IRS directly. I'm subcontracting for a subcontractor. It's a long story. But when you work a job like this, this is a seasonal thing, because the tax forms really only come in at one period of the year. So, at least in big numbers. So they really only need people for a short period of time. So I can't imagine that they think they're getting anything out of staying over the break. I mean, they're not going to get, you know, what kind of suck-up points are you going to get when you have a job that's only going to last a month anyway? When people come and tell you to take a break. And I was like, don't you want to go on break? They said, no, we don't want to go. You don't have to go I was like, no, you don't have to go, but, you know, someone says you could stop for a while. I mean, you know, you get paid for doing nothing. That's not a bad deal, is it? But they're like, no, and they were kind of snotty about it. And that's what gets me. It's like, I don't understand that. I mean, I believe in hard work. I'm a hard-working guy. My problem is sometimes with jobs that I don't know how to play the game. And I'll work hard in areas where I don't need to work hard, but where the politics of the workplace is, I don't work hard. I'll take a break. If I need to use the restroom, I use the restroom. When it's time for lunch, I go to lunch. If there's a problem with pay, people hear about it from me. You know, those are all breaking the rules. And that's one of the reasons why I've had troubles holding on to jobs. But you know what? I really do get kind of tired of being made to do things. Let me tell you a little story about my wife. This is something she used to tell me. She used to work for a company called S&S Cafeteria. Some of you may be familiar with it. It's a fairly decent little cafeteria-style place. Food isn't bad. I used to love their little potatoes. There's not one close here in Atlanta that I know. I know there's one outside of town. But what she used to do, and we're talking about she was in high school, so it was like her first job. And one of the things she used to do was to roll the silverware. That was her job, actually, to roll the silverware. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, if you go into these places, you got your knife and your fork and your spoon rolled up in a napkin. And her job was to do that. She had to do a lot of those in the day to make sure there was enough for the crowds. And she would do it at different times during the day. And one time, she was finished with all the ones that she had to do, and she noticed that the guy who was doing the dishes needed a little help, so she started helping out a little bit there. And the boss saw her doing that, and basically it made it part of her job. And she didn't get any more pay for it, but then that was just something that she was expected to do. She was just being nice, which, if you knew my wife, that's just the way she was. And that would be the way I used to be anyway on stuff like that, where just you see somebody needs help, you go and help them out. And unfortunately, her bosses took advantage of that, and they made her do that. And after a little while, she realized that she was just being taken advantage of. And these women, I think, you know, the two that just wouldn't go out on break, I think they just kind of perpetuate that. Although the people I talked to, the ones that were regular employees and not the temp employees like we are, they were like, I don't know, you know, I go to them, what's the deal with these people? Why are they not taking breaks? And it's like, I don't know. You know, go on break, man. You know, jobs come and jobs go. God, it's really sickening when you have work. You know, in my case, it's not bad because the workplace really doesn't force you. But you have places that are kind of like look down on you if you take a break. And I'm like, what is there? What is the deal with that? And, you know, I can see it to a certain extent coming from the employers, because the employers, you know, that you know they want to suck every ounce of energy out of you they possibly can. But when you're working for a living, someone offers you a chance to, you know, take 10 or 15 minutes to just sit down and relax, have a drink of water, and just clear your head, then take it. You know, don't spend all your life working hard. My wife worked her butt off her whole life. And I had, when she got here, I had to force her to relax. Even when she was sick, she wanted to go out and go to work. And I would get mad at her and say, you stay home, you relax. You know, you do stuff that you want to do for a change. And, you know, if she hadn't, you know, if she had gone to work, imagine how it would have been, you know, her dying and not having a chance to just sit back and enjoy herself. I was glad I was able to give her some time where she can just do the things that she wanted to do. She liked to do cross-stitching. She liked to watch detective shows on TV. You know, life's too short, people. When someone offers you a chance to take a break, take a break. Another thing that happened while we were getting into work, I was talking with one lady, and we were talking about the whole immigration thing. And she was pointing out, you know, all these Mexicans coming in, taking, you know, the usual spiel. And I was like, look, here's the deal, okay? The Mexicans are not your problem. You know, this is a black lady talking, and there's a lot of white people out there who view the black people as the problem when it comes to stealing jobs and stuff like that. But here she is bitching about the Mexicans, and it's like, look, you know, the Mexicans are not your problem. The problem is with people who pit black people against Mexicans, white people against black people, you know, all of that stuff. All of that stuff is stuff that they do so that they can rip us off and we're taking our energy out on each other. This is not a race war, people. It's not blacks versus Mexicans. This is a class war. Okay? Enough is enough. And black people complain about Mexicans, and poor white people complain about Mexicans and blacks. I don't doubt that the Mexicans complain about black people and white people, but like I said, this isn't a race struggle, it's a class struggle. We're all in this together. This is a global economy. In a global economy, there are no such thing as immigrants. There are no such things as immigrants. We are working people. We know no country. We're in it for ourselves, because we have to be. And we have to stick together, because that's the only power that we have. And it really, really upset me. There has been anti-immigration sentiment among the people who have been in this country ever since going back almost to the beginning. Especially when you talk about the history of New York, you're talking about the numerous numbers of immigrants that came in, millions of people pouring in over the years. And most of them are Italian descent, Irish descent, stuff like that. And those people used to be pitted against each other for jobs and stuff like that. So this sort of thing isn't new, but it's got to stop. It's a different world now in the world of telecommunications. It's a different world. We simply know more now than we did before. And we've got to stop fighting among ourselves. The Mexicans aren't the problem, people. They had the huge protests here. And a lot of that really didn't even have to do with them being... You know, the people doing the protesting being illegals. And I hate that term, somebody who's illegal. That's a ridiculous term. Nobody's illegal. And but a lot of it, what it is it had nothing to do with them being illegals, but with them having family and friends who are here over the border and who could get deported or who could take it. It's about breaking up families. And one of the things I always talk about is that if you want to stop this kind of immigration, what you need to do is you need to make Mexico a better country. You need to make it where so that they won't feel the need to come over here just because the jobs are better over here. If you have a global labor standard, then people can go out and get good jobs where they live. And if they want to move here for other reasons, they can move here. I'm not against people moving here. As far as I'm concerned, they can let all the Mexicans in they want. Let's give them the citizenship. Let's let them go to our hospitals. You know, let them get on the social welfare programs. I don't give a damn. I'm all for it. Maybe that's a little unrealistic, but I have personal reasons for that. But if you sit here and you complain about these guys are stealing our jobs and those guys are stealing our jobs, no, the people who are stealing your jobs are the top 10% of the people in this country. They're the ones who are stealing your jobs because they're the ones that are sucking up all the money and not giving anything back. As I mentioned in one of the Cup of Joe reports this week, there's this whole BS about trickle-down. I've hated that trickle-down theory all the time. There's only one thing that trickles down, or as I should say, there's only one thing that rolls downhill. And these people are sucking up all that money, and we're not getting anything back. So, you know, it really angers me when I hear people speak bad about immigrants, because we're all immigrants in that sense. Anyway. Let's take a little break. Let me catch my breath. And we'll be back with more with the Cup of Joe Show on Head On Radio Network.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
With EstateRadio.com.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That
article.
It's
not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Okay, and we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the phone numbers to call in are 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Call me. I want to have a discussion with you. What do you think about all this stuff I'm talking about with dumb things people do at work, like not going to breaks, and the whole immigration policy, or what happened with Cynthia McKinney? Call me, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, or 1-877-443-2366. I really do want to hear from you. And, of course, you can join us in the chat room, too. That's headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat room link, and you'll be there with everybody. Where was I? I get interrupted about this stuff. You know, the thing about it is, when you start to talk about immigration, and what the right wing does when they talk about these matters, is eventually they start to go a little too far. I found this article from thinkprogress.org, and right-wing radio host Brian James of KFYI Radio in Arizona was advocating murder as a way of dealing with undocumented immigrants. This is an excerpt of what he said. He said, "What we'll do is randomly pick one night every week where we'll kill whoever crosses the border. Step over there and you die. You get to decide whether it's your lucky night or not. I think that would be more fun. I'd be happy to sit there with my high-powered rifle and my night scope." What a coward. What a stupid coward. And this is what they do. You know, this guy... Brian James, he's well paid for what he does. He makes a lot of money. So he's not feeling the effects of anything of what's going on. You know, let me tell you something about these Mexican people coming over the border. They're just like you and me. They want the same things that we want out of life. Maybe not specifically, but in general. They want to work. They want to earn money so that they have a better life and a better future for themselves and for their children, which is no different from what we want here. And people think that by them coming over here, they're stealing that from us. They're not stealing it from us. And what the problem is that guys like James, who aren't being affected by these things, who don't really care, who don't really see these Mexican people as human, are perfectly happy to go out and say, let's just kill them, and to use them to turn us against each other. The remarks that he made prompted Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard and U.S. Attorney Paul Charlton to send a complaint to the FCC. Let's see, according to this, at no time during this hour did Mr. James disavow violence or indicate that he was joking. In fact, when one caller suggested Mr. James didn't really mean he wanted to shoot and kill immigrants, Mr. James retorted that, in fact, he did mean it. Immediately after this exchange, Mr. James engaged the next caller in a discussion about the correct ammunition to use when shooting border crossers to make sure the shots would be fatal. You know, I would hear some people on the left react to say, well, maybe we ought to kill this guy. But you know what? There's thousands of more like him. Killing him doesn't make any damn difference. The only thing you can reasonably do is just to keep these people off the air, keep these people out of power. You know, he has the right to think this. He may have the right to believe this. But he doesn't have the right to openly advocate it. And obviously he doesn't have the right to try it. And he doesn't have the right to spew it out over the airwaves like that. Now, he hasn't apologized. He claims his comments were satire. I got your satire right here, buddy. James later said that a KFYI doesn't advocate shooting illegals. It might be fun, but they don't advocate it. I mean, I'm sure he got pressured into saying that, but that's not even really an apology. You can contact KFYI. Chickboss at KFYI.com. C-H-I-C-K boss at KFYI.com. Let them know what you think about all that. And that's really kind of sickening. To advocate killing people. Makes you wonder what it's come to. Of course, they have doing it. They're starting to talk about killing Iranians now. Iranians. Now that they've killed off how many Iraqis? 10,000 or so? You know, people talk about the 2,000 or so U.S. soldiers dead, and that's not good. But think about the tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqis. And it's all part of the same deal. It's all part of that same anger, where you have just people who just assume that other people aren't human. They're brown people who live on the other side of the world, therefore they're not human. And we can feel free to drop bombs on them. It saddens me. It saddens me. Where was I? What was I talking about here on the Cup of Joe show the other day? Where they're spouting off on Iran. And if you go to my blog, there's a post called Deja Vu All Over Again. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this, before I had the Cup of Joe blog, I had a blog called Pax Liberalis. And Pax Liberalis is my term for global Earth or global peace, basically. One world, one peace. Well, any kind of BS you want to name it. Just basically a single global political entity that I feel is eventual. It's going to happen. One way or the other. It's just a question of what kind of thing that we want. And, whether or not we want this global hegemony to be a corporate thing or if we want it to be a truly democratic society where you have a good liberal sense of balance between government and private enterprise, where you have global labor standards, you know, this and that. And I had been going through my old archives from the Pax Liberalis site, and what I decided to do was start taking them out and reposting them predated, because on Blogger you can predate things. I wasn't aware you could do that. Once I found that you can do that was when I decided to put this together. But while I was in the process of doing that, I ran into a whole bunch of political cartoons that I had posted on the site back around the time of the beginning of the war with Iraq. And how, you know, the war itself went pretty smoothly. I mean, we rode right in there. And that wasn't too expected, although I did expect the Iraqis to put up a bit more of a fight than they did. But it wasn't too expected. What I knew was going to be a hassle was the occupation. And a hassle is not the right word. What I knew was going to be a serious problem was the occupation. And as those of you who have been following this story know, this was just one step on of a much larger plan produced by a bunch of people who were involved in what they called the Project for a New American Century, or PNAC. And the PNAC crowd included such people as Rumsfeld, Vice President Cheney, Doug Faith, Paul Wolfowitz, John Negroponte, all people who have been instrumental in Bush administration policy from the beginning, especially when you're talking about Iraq. And a lot of these political cartoons dealt with what they felt was the next step, which would be invading Syria. Now, obviously, that hasn't happened. And I think that's simply because of what happened in Iraq. I mean, I hate to say it this way, but the insurgents have been doing a good thing in the sense that they've been keeping the Bush administration and their neocon backers from going into Iran and going into Syria, which is what they've wanted to do ever since. If they hadn't been going in there and shooting things up and making things difficult, then we might be at war with Iran right now. We might be at war with Syria right now. And then God knows what happens. I don't even want to think about what's going to happen if and when they nuke Iran. And I really think that those decisions have already been made. But I really just don't understand. And obviously they still want to go there into Syria. And I just don't understand why they think they can be successful in Iran. They, you know, they can't invade it. Our troop strength is not there to invade it and to try and occupy it. And if they drop nukes on it, my God, that's only going to make things worse. Now, here's the thing. A while ago in one of the reports, I talked about the James Bond movie Goldfinger. For those of you who have never seen Goldfinger, it's one of the better James Bond movies. The villain in Goldfinger, he's a guy who loved gold, and he loved to hoard gold. And he was setting up a plan where it seemed like he was trying to rob Fort Knox, which is where all of America's gold is kept. But what he really wanted to do was detonate a nuclear bomb inside Fort Knox and basically irradiate it so that the gold would be useless to everybody else and would therefore increase the value of his own gold. Now, according to Greg Palast, who was writing for a British newspaper, he said that the reason why Iraq is going the way it's going is because what they wanted to do was keep Iraq's oil off of the market so that the value of Saudi oil and the value of Texas oil and all the Texas oil people, all of these people, their oil would be worth more. You know, kind of like the James Bond villain. And if that's the case, then dropping nukes on Iran makes no sense at all because, you know, what people don't realize about the Saudi family or the country of Saudi Arabia, it's run by the Saudi family, but they have a lot of fundamentalists in Saudi Arabia as well. And they're just itching for a chance to take over the country. And that may or may not be very easy because obviously the Americans don't want that to happen. But if Iran should fall, if the Saud family should fall, then nothing's going to be work. Nothing's going to work right. You know, if the Saud family falls, then we're not going to have Saudi Arabia's oil. And of course, you're talking about Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, all of that. It's not going to be a pretty picture. It's not going to be a pretty picture. And I wish I knew what we can do about it. The Bush people are talking about Iran, and God knows they've already made up their minds about it. And nothing's really going to change them. That's just the way they are, unfortunately. And I wish I had an answer. I really do wish I had an answer for it. Okay. Like I keep saying on my blog, it's a good thing I don't drink because I desperately need one with all the stuff going on. We're going to take another break, and I'm going to try to rest my voice, which is getting a little hoarse. Call me. Call me, for crying out loud. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be back.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song. Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Tuh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha! Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. In case you're joining us for the first time, my name is Joe Vecchio. I am the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And once again, the phone numbers to call in, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And welcome everybody who's listening on the show in the Head On Radio chat room. And again, it's headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat room link and you can be there with all our friends. And of course, you know, if you go to headonradionetwork.com, you also have access to our message board where people can write back and forth to each other. We even have a couple of nice little trolls on there. I make it a point not to argue with the trolls. And some people wonder why I do that. But you know, the reason is I'm sick of beating my head against a brick wall with these people. There's just no point to it anymore. You know, they believe what they believe, and they go into these rooms sometimes to just cause trouble. They're not interested in any kind of serious debate. And quite frankly, the time for serious debate has long since passed. Long since passed. I'm fed up with these guys. There's no point in it. I mean, they don't believe anything you're going to tell them, and you don't have any reason to believe anything they're going to tell you. Especially when you're talking about, you know, the administration in particular. Why anybody pays any attention to what he says anymore is beyond me. The man's such a consistent liar, and not just him, the whole administration. They're such a bunch of consistent liars that I don't understand why you know, this whole professional media, why they even print anything they say. Because nothing they say is true. To continue on with what I was talking about in the last segment, you know, they're talking about, well, you know, we're still looking at the idea of going to Iran and nuking, blah, blah, blah. You know what? They've already made that decision. I'm pretty certain of it. And it's possible they're already planning on going after Syria and Jordan as well. And they only have a certain amount of time. I mean, what they're afraid of most is that the Democrats will retake Congress. But you know what? I don't even, you know, first of all, I don't think that's a possibility. And second of all, even if it was a possibility, I don't think that the Democratic leadership has the cojones to know what to do with the power to begin with. I really don't. And I want to talk about this. This was, let me see if I can get down to it. Philmon is one of my my favorite websites. It's also known as the Whiskey Bar. It's just http://Billmon.org. That's B-I-L-L-M-O-N. And Philmon is kind of like Digby. He's an op-ed columnist. There are different types of websites, and I've described them. There's like information warehouses like Atrios and the Sideshow. There's community blogs like Daily Coast and My Left Wing and there are editorialists. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Here I am, a guy who works with words, and I can't think of the right word, right? And Digby and Billmon are two of the best. And I mentioned I called the current Democrats, I called them Weimar Democrats. For those of you who are not familiar with this, and I'm sure some of you are, but just in case, for those of you who aren't, the Weimar Republic was the government of Germany that was there before the Nazis took over. And Billmon was talking about the things going on in Iran right now with the president whose name is, God, I can't even pronounce it, Ahmadinejad. Now, the guy they had before that was a guy named Khatami, who was moderate as far as the Iranians were concerned, and he was actually part of their own little counter-revolution there. But, of course, you know, the president of Iran really doesn't have any power. It's the priests, the Islamic priests who run things there. And what's happening is that apparently the current president of Iran is consolidating power, more power to himself. Slowly but surely, he's taking over. And Billmon had a post, and he was talking about, I lost it. I hate it when I do that. I wanted to click the thing. I can get it back. No problem. There it is. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. There we are. And Billmon was talking about, here we go. Da, 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 da. Get on it, Joe. Get on it. Okay, the post was entitled Munich. And he was talking about, let me read to you what he had to say in the blog. He said, Munich, the name, not the movie, has long been one of the neoconservative movement's most cherished political symbols, a kind of shorthand description for everything that the neocons despise about liberals and their approach to foreign policy. Munich equals appeasement, the worst sin in neocon theology. It also stands for weakness, cowardice, naivete, and an amoral willingness to bargain with the devil, as well as the failure to recognize that the devil never keeps his word. Munich is a 30s newsreel of a feeble old man standing on an airport tarmac, holding an umbrella in one hand and waving a meaningless scrap of paper in the other. Now, for what some of you who don't understand what I'm talking about, that's Neville Chamberlain, who was Prime Minister of England, who tried to negotiate with Great Britain, with Adolf Hitler. And, of course, Hitler wasn't going to listen to anything he said. What a lot of people don't understand, and this is what I talk about in World War II. A lot of the stuff that would happen in World War II, I blame in good part, on the British and the French. Because after World War I was over, the British and the French insisted on punishing Germany. A lot of people don't know. It was an armistice. It was not necessarily a complete and total surrender by Germany. It was not an unconditional surrender. It was an armistice. In fact, Veterans Day, original name, was Armistice Day, which was the day World War I ended. A lot of people don't realize that. Now, what happened was that the British and the French insisted on just going after Germany after World War I was over. They humiliated them, and the sanctions that they put on them helped bring about the economic circumstances that allowed someone like Hitler to take power in the first place. And when the Weimar Republic, which was the German government, like I said, before the Nazis took over, when they tried to get a little help from the British and the French basically refused them. So when Hitler came around, what Hitler was saying, he was inspiring pride in his people by saying, we're going to take this back. We're going to take back the land that's been taken from us by the British and the French. We're going to ignore their calls for the sanctions. We're just going to do what we want to do. And he did that. And because the British and the French, because, you know, Hitler and his Nazis were so strong about it, that they gave in areas where they wouldn't give in on the Weimar Republic. So as far as the German people were concerned, Adolf Hitler was doing a great thing. Just like I'm sure the American people are looking right now at everything that George Bush is doing and thinking, oh, he's doing great. You know, he's kicking butt and taking names in Iraq, you know, and he's going to go after the terrorists, blah, blah, blah. And we're being blinded by it. And the truth of the matter is that the Bush people are just in it for themselves anyway. But the thing about it is, it makes it very difficult for us to get power back. And the Democratic Party is kind of in that state right now. You know, they've tried to suck up to the, especially when you're talking about guys like Joe Lieberman, trying to suck up to the right on the pretense that these guys will work with them. And they never will. Republicans would sooner see us dead. If they could get away with it, they would do it. Even somebody who's small potatoes like me, they would do it. I need a drink. It's hard being on the left. You know, I do this because I feel it's necessary. I don't get a lot of money. Hell, I really don't get... Well, I don't want to say I don't get any money, but I don't get anywhere near enough for this. And we do it because we feel compelled to do it. And we're voices in the wilderness right now, but hopefully in time... Our time will come. Okay. Time to take another little break. Time for me to rest my voice a little bit more. Please give me a call, okay? 1-877-4HEAD-ON. I want to talk to you. I want to hear what you have to say about all this as well. We'll be back.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. A BuzzFlash reader nominated the Washington Post editorial board as the GOP Hypocrite of the Week, and he made such a compelling argument that we posted it in its entirety on Wednesday. In particular, the Post ran an editorial that said, quote, a good leak, unquote, was Bush's questionable magic wand declassification of information and its subsequent use to smear Joe Wilson's outing of the truth. Oh, come on. This is the same Washington Post that couldn't keep its reporters out of writing breathless stories about Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and Whitewater, and anything the Republicans tossed their way to try and bring down Clinton. But now, the Post, which supported the Iraq War, then apologized for reporting misinformation, remains defiantly unrepentant in support of Bush's efforts to deceive America. As the magazine editor and publisher noted, rarely does a newspaper publish an editorial so at odds with the facts reported in its news section on the same day. And as our BuzzFlash reader pointed out, a prominent blogger, Jane Hampshire, excoriated the Post, quote, the new Washington Post editorial, an enormous turd that editorial page editor Fred Hyatt no doubt wrote, is such an unmitigated piece of Bushko propaganda, such a giant bag of bullshit, it deserves to be taken apart, piece by piece, and beaten into the ground, unquote. We thank BuzzFlash reader Ron Russell for raking through the manure that the Washington Post editorial page spreads around now and then. It's not an easy job to stomach. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Man, oh man. So little time. Catch up with you soon. Thank you.
know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. In case you're just joining us, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Hey, like the song says, man, call me. Call me. The numbers to call in are 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And again, I want to invite everyone to join us in the head-on chat room. Go to www.headonradionetwork.com and click on the chat room. Hey, we do have a call. Peter from Tallahassee on line one. Pete, pull up a chair and have a cup of Joe.
Thank you, Joe. I'm so glad to hear you back on the radio this week.
Oh, great. Glad to be here.
I think you're doing a great job. The what you were talking about earlier about it being hard work to do what you do, it really is. Dealing in fact and dealing in the truth is the difficult part. Anybody can be like Limbaugh and make up ridiculous statements and then spin them using straw man arguments. It's difficult to do what you do, to look things up and tell the truth and state the fact. It's outrageous how hard it is.
Well, you know, it would be easier if we had, like, deep pocket people on the left like they have on the right. I mean, Limbaugh can afford to do what he does because somebody pays him a nice fat salary to do it. And, of course, you know, they feed him crib notes every day, so he gets his marching orders.
Well, that's true. And, you know, we do have deep pocket people on the left, and it amazes me that they some people would never even miss the funds it would take to back a program like yours. But it seems like they just don't play right. They just don't put their money where their mouth is sometimes.
This is something that we've talked about from time to time, not just me, but others. Bob has talked about this. And I think the problem is that when they do donate money, they tend to donate it to, like, a pet cause, or they'll give it to the Democratic leadership just without even thinking about where it's going to go.
Yes, yes. And the Democratic leadership, as we all know, just doesn't get it right. And which brings me to this point. You know, everybody's talking about the six generals who are now calling for Rumsfeld to retire. And the thing that gets me about that is even though they're calling for Rumsfeld to retire, they're still marching along the party lines. And I say that because they're not addressing the real issue. Rumsfeld didn't appoint himself. And it wasn't Rumsfeld who stood up and said that those were, you know, biological laboratories, and they weren't. That was another general whose name we know. And it wasn't Rumsfeld who said that there was going to be a mushroom cloud coming. That was someone else. It's the higher ups. I mean, and that's what the Bush administration wants, is for the people less than the White House staff to take the fall for these things. So now everyone's conveniently pointing at Rumsfeld. And, you know, the guys are at least they're speaking out, but they're speaking out not in the way that I would.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, I agree in part of what you're saying, but the thing about it is that Rumsfeld really is one of the power cores of this administration. There's Rumsfeld and there's Cheney, and there's a couple of other guys too. But really, Rumsfeld and Cheney are the two guys. And there's no chance that Rumsfeld is going to go, partly because he knows too much. And like we see happening with Scooter Libby, Libby's not going to go down easy. He wants to take people with him because he's not going to be the fall guy for this. And Rummy knows a lot more than Scooter Libby does. And keep in mind, Scooter Libby was Dick Cheney's chief of staff. Very, very powerful person. We're not talking about some low-level schmuck here. And Rummy is higher on that. You know, there's those who say that Bush is just a tool, and those who say that Bush is the one in charge and pulling the strings to everybody else. But
yes,
I think it's really
one way and some the other. It's hard to ever.
Yeah. But they're all kind of in it together, though. That's just the deal.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe Rumsfeld's more involved in the inner circle than I had thought. It just seemed to me that it was everyone taking shots at another lower-level official. True that he's placed for the Bush administration, just like Michael Bolton's mission is to destroy the United Nations.
John Bolton.
Yes, John. Excuse me. Apologies to Michael Bolton if you're listening.
Michael Bolton destroys other things, but that's another story.
Right. And by the way, Michael, if you're listening, how about a check? Oh, these guys kill me. And I miss your co-host. Is she coming back in this evening?
Yes, she should be here in a short. Like I said, she had a date. This is one of the drawbacks of doing this stuff.
Yeah, I think
Saturday
I had
night.
One of those once. I'll have to look it up, though.
Well, Phyllis is a lesbian, so in her case, a date would be with a girl as well. So.
Oh, well, it could be a fun evening for power to her.
But she should hopefully be here pretty soon. Now, we were supposed to have a guest on. In fact, she should have been starting now, but she had a family emergency, like I said. Mary Scott O'Connor from My Left Wing. But listen, Pete, thanks for calling, okay?
Thank you. And you hang in there because you're a needed voice.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night. Well, yeah, that's a good point he does bring up. And the thing about it is, Rumsfeld really is one of the inner circle. I mean, you talk about Rumsfeld, you're talking about Cheney, you're talking about Faith and Wolfowitz. All these people are Project for a New American Century people. And they were advocating going into Iraq when Clinton was president. And when Bush and his people came in 2001, they were openly, they basically acted like the 8 years of Bill Clinton never happened. They were just taking over like they were taking over directly from the first George Bush. I was never a big fan of the first George Bush, and I'm still not a big fan of the first George Bush. And there are a lot of people sometimes who say, well, maybe the father should say something to the son. I have no idea whether or not the father is simply trying to continue policies of his own through his son or not. I really don't know what goes on with these people, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, after a while, I stopped trying to figure out what's going on with them. The point for me is get them the hell out of power. Get them the heck out of there. Worry about, you know, the psychology of it afterwards. The important thing is for them to get out of power completely. We need to do this. And I just don't see it happening right now. I mean, that's the real shame of it. Back to Bilmon. This is actually another article. You know, Pete brought this up, and it brought me to another article. He was talking about Rumsfeld himself. Let's see, and this is what he had to say. I said, the catcalls have grown so loud about asking Rumsfeld to resign that the White House apparently has decided it can't go on pretending not to hear them. So Scotty, my ass is halfway out the door already, McClellan, used a question at Thursday's press briefing as an opportunity to reaffirm his master's undying support for the embattled defense secretary. And Mr. McClellan said, the president believes that Secretary Rumsfeld is doing a very fine job during a challenging period in our nation's history, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan said in a briefing. He went on to read long quotations from the nation's top military officer, Marine General Peter Pace, praising Rumsfeld's dedication and patriotism. Pace, of course, works for Rumsfeld and has already seen what happened to Joint Chief of Staff Chairman, who refused to read the script handed to them. Everybody understands his position. But if I were him, I wouldn't expect a very friendly reception the next time he runs into some of his old colleagues at the Army-Navy Club. It's pretty obvious why so many of Remy's enemies are crawling out of the woodwork now. They're hoping to improve the odds that the Field Marshal will be swept away by the same broom that removed Andy Carden and is now said to be hovering around the butts of McClellan and Jon Snow. And again, this is all from Billmont. And he goes on to say, finally, my advice would be, forget about it. The chances that Dick Cheney will fire his old boss and ideological comrade in crime are only slightly higher than the chances that Rumsfeld removal will lead to an even minor improvement in the situation in Iraq. It's almost like asking Cheney to fire himself. Back to me here. A lot of people forget when Bush was first running for office in the 2000 campaign, Cheney was the guy who was responsible for finding a vice presidential candidate. And, of course, Cheney found himself. I really think, you know, you go into the question of who's in charge, whether it's Bush or whether it's Cheney or whether it's Rumsfeld. Really, as far as I'm concerned, they're all interchangeable. I mean, they're all part and parcel of the same thing. They talk about Bush's bubble. These are the people who are all part of that. And I've heard rumors that you know, Bush can get mad at Cheney, some of this and some of that. You know what? Bush can't afford to alienate Cheney. He can't afford to alienate Karl Rove. These are really the people that make things work. Bush is in part centerpiece, but let's not kid ourselves. He does have a say in what goes on. But he's not a detail guy. He talks about him being a CEO president. He really is a CEO president, at least in terms of what modern CEOs do, which is basically give people orders and assume that they're going to carry them out. And then they can't get paid huge sums of money for doing that, far more than anybody else makes. You know, CEOs make their salaries have increased something like 500% in the last 20 years, while the salaries of regular working people have barely gone up at all. And actually, in terms of real money, they've gone down. Now, what is gas now? $2.60. It's up around $2.60 a gallon here in Atlanta, and Atlanta's pretty low. Now, as I was mentioning in the other segment, if things go really, really bad and the Saud family falls, could you imagine what would happen if the price of gas goes up to $6, $7, or maybe even $10 a gallon? What were the Bourbonites going to say? I mean, it cost to fill up my car. When I had a good car, it would cost me, when gas was about a buck a gallon, it was about a 15-gallon tank, so it would cost me about $15 to fill the tank. Now, we're talking about taking maybe $40, $45 to fill up the tank. Now, maybe to some guy making $100,000 a year, well, that's a bit more than what I expect, and that's not that big a deal. But to someone who's just barely getting by, tripling the amount of money you're paying for gas, that's basically a tax. And what I can't understand is working people who continue to vote for Republicans. And again, this was one of my reports over the last week. Why working people who vote for Republicans vote for them on the premise that they're going to cut taxes for them? It's insane. And they'll never vote for Democrats at this point. Even if they stop voting Republican, the only thing they're going to do is stop voting Republican. They're never going to vote for Democrats because they've been so brainwashed into thinking that Democrats are evil. I mean, I have my problems with the Democratic leadership, but I have some specific stuff about that. And I'm not a Democrat for the sake of being a Democrat. I'm a Democrat and a liberal for very, very specific reasons. And the specific reasons these guys have to do with the fact that they are being, you know, they have people who are pointing fingers and saying, you must hate these people. They're the ones who are responsible for your miserable life. They're the ones that are causing, whether you're talking about black people or Mexican people or Asians or Iraqis or Iranians, you know, terrorists, liberals, communists. Just doesn't make a difference. Just point at somebody and scream hate. And they follow. And unfortunately, fear is a very, very motivating force. It's worked for humankind for many, many years. And when the day comes, finally, when we stop getting motivated like by that, is when things change. Because, you know, it's the working people who are the motor of the world. And we're the ones who make things go. And if we all stood up together, no matter how much money and power these people have, it wouldn't be enough. Because I'll say this, there's one true thing about poor people. There's a lot more of them than there are rich people. There's a lot more of us. And if we ever get our act together, it's Clayton's, you hear me? Clayton's for the big guys. Okay, let's take another break. And we'll be back with more. Hey, we're more than halfway through. Give me a call. I'm waiting to hear from you. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe radio show.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good. Once,
Planet Check.
Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel van.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. In case you're just joining us, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Hey, let me play this for you. We were going to play this over the break, but I forgot to bring it up to Bob. Bob, if you want to run that, just go ahead and run that.
The
Religion and politics often make some people lose all perspective and give way to ranting and raving and carrying on like emotional children. They either refuse to discuss it with reason or else they prefer argumentum ad hominem, which is a hell of a way to conduct a discussion. Well, anyhow, not long ago, I was talking about the elections and how the campaigns were ignoring the issues and sticking instead to invective and personal crap that had nothing to do with the substantive problems of running a government, which is all true, as you know, if you followed the speeches and so-called debates of the candidates. Anyhow, one of the guys I was talking with said not a word in the whole conversation except at the end when he suddenly chuckled and said we were all full of shit and why didn't we go live in Russia or China if that was the way we all hated the United States of America. Next thing you know, the whole blooming discussion was more like a brawl and the epithets flew thick and fast and the noise is incredible. Someone said son of a bitch and I think he said bastard. I couldn't be sure. It was also confusing. Well, anyhow, I was attempting to get it all back on a rational level. I tried, for example, to talk to the one who had started it all and I asked him just what did he mean we were all full of shit. Was he making a statement of fact as he knew it and where was his documentation to back up his claim? I think Socrates would have been proud of the way I refuted his argument. That is, I tried to refute it, but all he could offer by way of rebuttal was more of the same about how we were all full of shit, but he wouldn't say why. He just kept on repeating it. That and the part about Russia and China and communist dupes, and I'll have to confess that I got a bit angry and told him to stuff his ideas up his, which you don't have to tell me is hardly a way to convince anyone in an argument. Then he got salty and threatened to give me a punch in the mouth if I didn't shut up, and I really got hot, and the others did too, and we all beat the shit out of Mr. Conservative, and after all, he had only himself to be blamed. This is still a free country, and anyone telling a fellow like me, brother, you're full of shit, better be good and ready to answer politely when asked if he'd care to say why.
Scott Beach. Scott Beach with Religion and Politics. I love that bit. For those of you who are wondering, if you listen closely enough to that, you can hear where it's like cut together. He doesn't really say that all without breathing. I don't think that's possible. But I love that little bit, and I wanted to play it because it really, you know, and that was done in, I believe, in the 60s or the 70s. So things really haven't changed that much. Conservatives are still a bunch of loudmouth jerks, and that's all the argument they seem to have, that we're all full of, and, you know, we all should move to China or Russia or something like that. Anyway, we're back here on the show. We are, God, what is it, just a little more than a half hour left. It's remarkable time is going that fast. Again, the phone number to call in, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, 1-877-443-2366. And again, let me invite everyone to join us all in the Head-On chat room. Go to www.headonradionetwork.com. And click on the chat room link, and you can be there with all our friends. I'm settling into this a little more. I hope you liked the music that I picked out, by the way. That's all karaoke music that I grabbed from different sources. And I've got a dirty little secret for you that I'll tell you. I like to sing, but I suck. My wife and I used to pull down these karaoke songs, and especially duets, and we'd sing together. And we both sucked. It was horrible. Plants would die when we'd sing, okay? We couldn't keep a pet in the house because they would just, and then people would call up saying that we were torturing the pets because of the stuff. But I do like to sing, so I get these karaoke songs, and in my private moments, I'll sit there and I'll sing along. Sometimes I'll do so much of it, my throat gets sore. That's not what happened on Thursday. I just ate something that disagreed with me, so I couldn't get a report out because my throat was all sore. But that happened to me once. I was doing so much singing that my throat got bad. And I was working at the pizza place at the time, and I was answering phones, so I couldn't go to work. What were we talking about? There was a lot of things going on. Let me talk about this a little bit. Let me change tack, because we've been talking about Iran and all that. Was last week, and at least in the weeks past, in the Cup of Joe reports, I've been talking about the whole abortion deal. Now, you know, for me, pro-life, I hate that term, because these people are not pro-life. What these people are anti-choice. And I know it's very hard to try to get that thing in there, but, you know, to get that wording in there, to get that to be part of the dialogue, just like, you know, the way the right manages to do that with about us on the left. You know, we're the angry left. And if Mary Scott O'Connor was here, we'd be talking about that more. But I want to talk about this real quick, because abortion is one of those hot-button issues. And, you know, they had that law in South Dakota basically outlawing it. Well, however, they didn't have any punishments for the mother, which I think is kind of ridiculous because, you know, if you're assuming that an embryo like that is a human being and if you abort it, then there should be penalties, you know, for the mother. I mean, you know, imprisonment, whatever. You know, if it's a human being, then killing it is murder, period. There ought to be consistent. Well, there is a country that does that. And this was a big article in the New York Times magazine last Sunday. And it's El Salvador, which, if you remember right, was part of the whole Iran-Contra thing. The Contras were the so-called freedom fighters in El Salvador that we were giving weapons to. And these freedom fighters, of course, who Reagan said was the moral equivalent of our founding fathers. Unbelievable. And they were, you know, murdering children, murdering nuns and stuff like that. But in their country, now that the right-wingers have taken over there, they have made abortion illegal. In fact, the Catholic Church pushed for it very strongly. And they even have situations where women go to prison. Where if a woman goes to a doctor and has an examination or something, and they find evidence that she's had an abortion, the doctors are obligated to report it. Not a lot of doctors like this, but there are people working in the office who, you know, would be aware of what's going on, and if the doctor doesn't report it, they'll report it, and if they report it and the doctor doesn't report it, then the doctor will get in more trouble, or the doctor will get in trouble, period. And there are some instances where a woman's uterus can be removed and used as evidence. Can you imagine that? The lengths that people go through? It's sickening. And I don't even have words for it. I just sit here and stumble over it all the time because you look at it and it's like watching a train wreck. You just can't believe it's happening. Now, at least I'll give them credit for being consistent, because if you're talking about it being murder, that's what it really is. And I've talked about this before. In fact, I got to write this. I got to write like a Columbo episode. Anybody ever watched Columbo? This was an old detective show. Some of you younger kids don't know anything about the show, unless maybe you see it at reruns, but I doubt very much that you guys watch those channels. But Columbo was a great detective show. And what was unique about the Columbo show was that they always showed the murder taking place. And the whole thing was about how Columbo broke the guy down, broke whoever it was down, usually very rich people. And I always wanted to write an episode of Columbo where he's going after some rich person who had an abortion, you know, that they intentionally caused a miscarriage or something like that. And I got to write that episode because I can just see it. I can't do it. I can't do it right now. I used to do a really good Columbo. I'm just not in the mindset for it. Well, you know, sir, excuse me, pardon me, but if that's what you meant, then I can't understand because, you know, I have to do this for the paperwork, sir. I have to do this for my bosses to get the paperwork right. And, you know, when you said that you did this, it just didn't make any sense to me. So I just need for you to clarify that, if you could, so that I can write this up in my final report. And, of course, in the end, Columbo always got the guy. And that's just the thing. When someone has a miscarriage, you have to treat it as a possible murder investigation because it's not inconceivable for someone to do something to intentionally miscarriage a baby. It has happened. And women will do a lot of different things if they're faced with a pregnancy that they can't have or, you know, whatever. And whatever it is, it's not pro-life. There's sensible ways of dealing with these issues. And if you sit there screaming, you know, waving rubber fetuses in people's faces and pictures of unborn babies and doing everything you can to discourage it, and then you turn around when the baby is born and just abandon it, I don't see how that's pro-life at all. You're against abortion, but you're also against the social services that will lessen the burden on poor pregnant women. You're also against any kind of birth control. You're against recreational sex is what it boils down to. Whether you are or not, that's what it boils down to. And if your goal is to stop abortions, I don't understand why you think, A, making it illegal will make any difference, or B, if you're going to make it illegal, not having any penalties for anyone except the doctor. I don't understand why you think that's going to solve the problem. And, of course, you're never going to get rid of abortion anyway, because as is happening in El Salvador, is that the very rich are still able to get the abortions that they want because they'll be able to fly elsewhere. Anyway, let's take another little break, and we'll be back with the last half hour of the Cup of Joe radio show. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
How can we help prepare our kids for the future? Hi, this is Roger McGuinn. These days, our children face challenges unimaginable to us only a generation ago. We adults need to help our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest and keeps them involved. If that something happens to be music, the child will benefit in so many ways. Playing music in school is a great way to make friends. Studies are showing that kids involved in music are less likely to get into trouble. And kids who studied music find science and math easier to grasp. They tend to score higher on SATs. It has something to do with something called spatial IQ. So get your kids involved with school music. It's a great way to help prepare them for life.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Oh, I had to stop for a second to laugh at that. That was so funny. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and corporate allies. Man, that is so true. God, thanks, Bob, for that. I didn't know you had that in there. To play, but I'm glad you played that. If that was Agnes, thank you, Agnes, because that was just one of, you know, I used to work, one of the jobs I've had, and I've had a lot of different jobs over the years. I actually worked as a cell phone salesman. I worked for Nextel. And we, of course, had a quota to keep. And I want to tell you this story because it's just a perfect example of how things are. And it really ties into kind of, you know, the Bush people and the people who are supporting them mainly. Because apart from being a CEO's president, he's also a salesman president. But let me get to my story, and I'll show you how that relates to this. I was supposed to sell X amount of phones per week. Per week, I think it was. And, you know, actually, you're not so much selling the phones, you're selling the service. That's what they want you to sell. And I worked in a store. It was in a strip mall that was across the street from a big mall. And the big mall had a Nextel store in it. In fact, I took out a little map and I figured out that there were something like 15 or 20 stores within like a 5-mile radius that sold Nextel products. And we were the slowest store in the district. And the reason why we were the slowest store in the district is because we were in a very, very bad location. What it was a cell phone shop that Nextel had taken over. Actually, there was used to be two different places. Well, there was one place, and that got bought out, and then it got bought out by Nextel. But they all sold cell phones. But when Nextel bought it out, they already had the store in the mall. And what they should have done, was to basically either sublet this store, or maybe use it for storage, or use it for something else. It didn't make any sense to have a store right across the street from their store in the mall, right? Especially one that was in an area that doesn't get a lot of walking traffic. And we would have days in that store. The reason why we were the slow-selling store in the district was because we would have days where I would get maybe three people walk in. In fact, there were days that I had nobody walking in on an 8-hour shift. I had absolutely no customers. Now, anybody who knows anything about sales know that you're basically going to fail 3 out of every 4. Not because of anything that you do wrong, but just simply because those are percentages. Not everybody coming into a shop wants to get a cell phone. Not everybody can afford to have a kind of cell phone service. And especially when you're talking about Nextel, which at the time, if you were just looking for a cheap phone service, just a few minutes a month for emergencies and stuff like that, Nextel really didn't have anything like that. Their deal was if you had a situation where you used the phone a lot and you made a lot of long-distance calls, it was really better off at the time. I can't say what they are now because they got taken over by Sprint anyway. But here's the thing. They were always blaming the salesman for the low productivity. And even though it had nothing to do with the salesman skills, because they moved me over to the store over in Woodstock, Georgia, and I was selling very well. In fact, I was the number 4 salesman in the district. And I really don't have a salesman's mentality. I'm a good customer service person, don't get me wrong. I like to talk to people. But my problem is I'm not really a hard sell kind of guy. You know, in fact, people get on me to market the show, you know, more than I do and more than I should, really, because I don't do it enough, and I'm sorry. I know I'm not good at it. I'm learning. I'm trying. But to be a sales guy, you really have to be kind of a hard sales guy, and that's kind of what they expected. And the district manager came over one day, and he was, you know, complaining to me about my sales. This was after I had done well at Woodstock. They moved me back to my original store thinking, oh, he was doing well there. Well, he'll translate that. But the problems that we were having with that store hadn't changed. They hadn't done anything to try to get more people in the store. That is the district manager's job. That is the store manager's job. In fact, they even made the store managers have to sell a certain amount of phones, which I thought was stupid. The store manager should be responsible for keeping the store organized and making sure everything runs smoothly and getting people in the door. It's the salespeople's job to sell to the people who come in the door. And the district manager, let's say his name was Clay, for the sake of argument, not his real name. And, you know, he was complaining to me about my numbers, and I said, well, Clay, you know the deal. You know what's going on here, and I went on about the usual stuff about how we hardly get anybody here, blah, blah. The term I used to use with him was you got to have grist to grind. You know, you want me to make bread, you got to give me the flour, right? You got to give me the stuff that I need. And, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time when I was talking to him, but he was getting upset. And, you know, finally he just said to me, gee, Joe, you're so smart, why don't you do my job? And I said, well, Clay, I could do your job. And he fired me on the spot. And when I said I could do his job, I meant it, because I understand what it means to be a district manager. I understand what it means to be a store manager. And what I was trying to explain to him was that, look, my sales aren't that good, although that really doesn't have anything to do with my sales skills. That's just because of lack of, you know, customers coming in. But even if my sales are not good, there's other reasons you want to keep me on. I'm a smart person. I happen to like the service that Nextel provides. And I'm a very good organizer. I'm good with numbers. I'm good at hiring, firing people. I have a good head for that. So there's other reasons to keep me on. I use the baseball analogy with him because he was a big Braves fan, as am I. And at that time, Vinny Castillo was playing for the Braves. Great third baseman, great fielding third baseman. Used to be a much better hitter than he was when he played for the Braves. He didn't hit as much. But you know what? You keep Vinny Castillo on because he was a great defensive third baseman. Right? So I used that reason. I said, look, you know, just because you got a guy who's not performing in one area doesn't mean that he can't be helpful in another area. He wasn't buying it, of course. He fired me on the spot for that. And I never understood that. And I never, you know, did I insult his ego to suggest that a mere salesman can talk to him? And I think he was kind of expecting me to have that salesperson's kind of attitude. And that's what I want to talk about when I talk about the Bush people and the people who support them. If you've ever been around salesmen, if you were a salesman yourself or been around salesmen, you know how competitive these people are. And one of the things I noticed, even among the low-level people at Nextel, and to be perfectly honest, for Nextel, it didn't really do any good to be a good salesman because they really didn't give enough in bonuses to justify, you know, working your butt off for that. Other stores actually were much better with that sort of thing. But there's a mentality among salesmen, even low-level salesmen, that you're afraid of missing a particular deal. You know, and you feel like you're afraid that if you don't jump on something, somebody else will grab it, and you'll view yourself as a failure if you don't do this. And I think that's what the case is. When you talk about people who really get up there in power, you know, there's always a desire to grab more because they're afraid not grabbing more will label them a failure. There was an emperor in Rome named Cincinnatus, and he gave up being an emperor to go back to work on the farm. And I wish more of these people would do that because I think, really, they lose themselves in this competition for power. And the same goes on in the power struggles within the Democratic Party. And when we talk about the Democratic leadership, you have to understand that for the longest time, the Democrats were in control. So if you wanted power in government, your key to that was power within the infrastructure of the Democratic Party. And even though it's been a long time since that's been effective, you know, that's been the reality of it. It was 94 when the Republicans took over Congress, and they've held it since then. I think a lot of the Democratic leadership still has that problem. Even the new people coming in, they're more concerned with you know, going and building themselves up within the system rather than just, you know, having a philosophy to believe in and counter. So everybody's kind of ingrained in that. And that's kind of the attitude that salespeople have. And that's, you know, the attitude that Clay had. And he expected me to have that attitude. You ever watch the show Roseanne? Roseanne is one of my favorite shows. And the quota thing got me to think about the show. There was several episodes with Fred Thompson, who was a Republican senator. And he played a manager at the plastic factory that Roseanne was working at in the very early part of the show. And he had raised their quota for production to very high levels. And nobody could keep it up. Everybody was having to work overtime, and everybody was stressed out. And, of course, Roseanne is the type of person who, you know, she's not going to put up with any BS. She's going to speak up about it. But what the guy did was make a deal with her that he would lower the quotas if she would basically suck up to him. Not suck up, but just, you know, play along a bit because he didn't like her. And once she decided to go ahead with that, then he just went right back and raised the quota again. And that got, you know, Roseanne, the character, all pissed off, and then she quit, along with a lot of other people, because he was just being manipulative, which is what a lot of these people are. And I think a lot more people need to start doing stuff like that. And eventually, in the show, the plastics factory went out of business anyway, and a lot of the people who used to work there wound up with happier jobs. But it always kind of bothers me when they do that. And they really do try to get as much work out of you as possible. That's why I hate that term productivity. Whenever somebody throws that term productivity at me, all that means to me is that they're trying to make you work harder and harder for less money. And I really don't like that. When they talk about Americans being productive, that just means that they're getting away with a lot more than they should. And that's why, you know, and it goes back to what I was talking about the ladies who wouldn't take a break. There's no point in that. You're not accomplishing anything. You're just working for free, basically. Never do that. This is why I'm on about Walmart. They force people to work for free. You work an hour over and they don't pay you. That's not right. That's stealing. But we put up with it. Go figure. Go figure. Let's take our final break here. And we'll be back with the last 15 minutes of the Cup of Joe show. Hey, give me a call. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. See if you can sneak yourself in here for the last 15 minutes or so. We'll be back.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway, hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Okay, we're back for the final 15 minutes on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once more, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Hey, if you want to get in on, you only got 15 minutes left. The numbers are 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And hi to all of you listening in on the chat room, headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat room link, and you can be in there with everybody talking away. And, you know, I tried to keep up with that all last week, and I was finding it too difficult. So you'll forgive me if I just not get involved with that while the show is going on. Afterwards, though, I'll drop in and say hi to everybody real quick. I was hoping Phyllis would be here by now. Obviously, her date must have went much better than she told me she was expecting it to go. So, I'm looking forward to her being here, hopefully, in time at least for us to run out to Waffle House like we did last time. Waffle House. And I asked her about that, and she said, well, we can go someplace better. I said, yeah, but better that's open on Saturday night at 10 o'clock. And she said, good point. Good point. Unless we want to go downtown somewhere or someplace really expensive. But, anyway, what's going on? What am I going to talk about these last few minutes? You know, if Ms. O'Connor had been here, it would be easy, but it's not. That's okay. You know, sometimes you got to bob and weave a little bit. You know, sometimes you just got to make stuff up as you go along. And it's a good thing I got a big mouth. You know, when Pete called earlier on, he talked about, you know, doing this. Really, the hard part of doing this is just getting the courage to go out and put your voice out. A lot of people have a problem with speaking publicly. Actually, I don't really have a big deal with it. Sometimes I get a little brain fart when you hear me pause for a second, and that's just because sometimes I'm trying to figure out what to say. And sometimes somebody's messaging me or something like that, and I have to stop and pay attention. I still haven't entirely gotten the hang of all of this left. I was looking through the blogs and seeing what's going on. We're all part of the angry left, by the way. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because I wanted to talk about that with Mary Scott O'Connor, because that's the term that's being used about us, angry. They used it for Howard Dean when they played the famous Dean scream that's angry. And angry is not really a term meaning angry. It's a term that the so-called liberal media, or as I call them, the so-called professional media, uses to describe us, that they mean to say crazy. Am I angry about stuff? Yes, I'm angry about stuff, but I'm not insanely angry. I think I have some very good reasons to be angry. I think all of us here on the left have some very good reasons to be angry. And when they talk about the angry white man back in 93, 94, what in the name of hell did they have to be angry about? I can't figure that out. I mean, here they have, they're on top of the world. They have everything they want. They're making good money. Yet they're angry. And the reason why they're angry is because day in and day out on right-wing hate radio, guys like Limbaugh and Michael Weiner, or Weiner, however he wants to pronounce it, his stage name is Michael Savage. Like he isn't really a bedwetting coward who wouldn't, you know, pee his pants the second he got into any real trouble. You know, they were basically brainwashed. And again, just taking advantage of people. They take advantage of people's faith. They take advantage of people's racism. They take advantage of people's fears. And again, you know, it was a right-winger that blew up the government building. That's angry. That's angry. But if I'm angry, I've got a reason to be angry. You know, I mean, it's like, I'm not angry that George Bush is in office. I'm angry that George Bush is doing war crimes. I'm angry that George Bush invaded a country that wasn't a threat to us. I'm angry that when George Bush got a memo whose headline was Bin Laden determined to strike at U.S., he goes off and takes a month-long vacation. I think those are good reasons to be angry, don't you? But what's going on there with the Washington Post and this big front page article on the angry left, and hopefully when Mary comes on next week, we can talk about that in more detail. But one of the things they're trying to do is to minimize the effect of bloggers, and eventually it's going to try to use that to minimize the effect of what we're trying to do here on Head On Radio Network, because you know what? This is the next extension of the Internet. And people are only just now starting to take advantage of it. And eventually we're going to reach the point where we're going to become a serious threat to broadcast radio. Not yet. I'm not going to make any claims, but you know what we're doing here at the Head On Radio Network is pretty good. And by the way, speaking of which, let me throw in another plug here. Drop by my site, drop by the Head On site. If you can afford to drop a buck or two into the donation till, please do so. Right now we rely on your support. I mean, it's not like we're going to be dead or anything if we don't get the money, but we do rely on your support. And it's important for us. Here comes Phyllis.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
But we won't get her on the mic. It's too late now. She's just walking in.
Tell everybody hi.
She says hi. Oh, did you get laid?
No, I didn't get laid.
She didn't get laid. Okay.
That was a good date.
But I figured her date was going better. But anyway, like I was saying, we've got reason to be angry. And you know what? I need to be angrier than I am. You know, I don't get angry enough sometimes. Every now and then I lose my temper. But I find that if I get too angry, then I lose my perspective and all that. And it's really, it's hard enough just living your life. You make it worse when you just lose your perspective. And I do that when I get too angry. And you know something? I don't hate George W. Bush on a personal level. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if he just got out of power and went back to Texas and lived on his ranch and cleared brush the rest of his life and never served any prison sentence, you know what? I'd be satisfied with that. Because at least he'd be out of power. You know? Anyway, what have we got going on here? Okay, listen, it's almost time to wrap this up. And Phyllis came just in time for her to buy me dinner at Waffle House. That's gonna be her punishment for being late. I was expecting to have two guests tonight, and they both kind of crapped on it. But you know that's okay, because every now and then it's good to just yak away. I like to just yak away. Hey, we got a Fourth Estate Radio on next with my good friend John Fox and Bruce Birch, who Bruce also does the All Things Reconsidered show here on the Head On Network. Let me give out my thank yous to Bob Kincaid and his lovely wife Agnes, or Agnes Kincaid and her lovely husband Bob, depending on who you're talking to. And I really do appreciate all the work that these guys do. So as soon as you're ready for me to head on out, just signal me here, Bob. And next we're gonna have Fourth Estate Radio, and they're gonna entertain you with a lot of stuff. And Phyllis and I are not gonna hang around for that because I'm hungry, and she's hungry, I'm sure. Thanks again for another great show. We'll be back next week for more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Until next week, bye.
Head On Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. Diplomacy? Who needs diplomacy? On Saturday, former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres said Iran's president is, quote, of Satan, not God, unquote. Peres was responding to equally hateful remarks from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who called Israel, quote, a dying tree. More ominously for mother's children all over the U.S., Peres also said that Ahmadinejad will end up like Saddam Hussein. Another mother's son died in George Bush's war against Iraq on Saturday. The U.S. Marine died in what the Pentagon termed a motor vehicle accident. He was part of the Marines' first logistic group. The death was not the result of enemy action. In Baghdad Saturday, four other human beings died in the burgeoning civil war that plagues the city's streets. 18 others were wounded in the car bomb attack on Palestine Street. George Bush's death toll also leaped in Afghanistan. Afghan sources said Saturday that 41 Taliban fighters were killed, as well as six members of the Afghan police, in a shootout in Kandahar province on Friday. A former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff ran to the defense of his former boss on Saturday. Retired General Richard Myers, himself partially responsible for the mess in Iraq, said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is doing a good job. Myers said members of the military should never criticize Rumsfeld. Last week, a group of retired generals and admirals called for Rumsfeld to resign. They contended his incompetence is getting Americans killed. Speaking of retired military men, Pope Benedict XVI, a former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, began his first Easter celebration Saturday in Rome. At the start of the service, Benedict carved the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, Alpha and Omega, into a candle, as well as carving the numbers for 2006. Benedict's message had something to do with grabbing a hold of the risen Lord. If there were any questions about the Bush administration's commitment to citizens along the Gulf Coast, some of them were answered last week. The federal government announced it may not spend the money needed to raise all the levees protecting low-lying areas in the Gulf Coast region. The decision may make it impossible for residents to obtain insurance coverage. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The United States isn't in bad enough shape to satisfy George Bush. On Saturday, Bush called for Congress to make his economy-crippling tax cuts permanent. In his weekly radio address, Bush repeated the same old line about how the tax cuts create jobs. He also claimed that letting the tax cuts expire, as they were designed to do, amounts to what he called raising taxes. Bush is, of course, the first president in history to try to wage offensive war and cut taxes at the same time. Trial will open on the day after Easter, that being Monday, for a Catholic priest accused of murdering a nun. Father Gerald Robinson is accused of stabbing Sister Mary Paul 72 times, as well as strangling her. The murder took place in a hospital chapel in Toledo in 1980. Prosecutors say Robinson performed some sort of ritual or ceremony along with the murder. Nepalese police cracked down on protesters again on Saturday. The security forces beat journalists who were protesting the Nepalese monarch's crackdown on free speech. Journalists and working people are calling for a general strike to demand the removal of the king. That prompted the royal attacks on the Nepalese people. And if it bleeds, it leads, even for the Weather Channel. A Weather Channel crew was arrested in Warren County, Tennessee, this past week when they refused to leave the property of a woman who had been killed in the spate of killer tornadoes there. The crew was charged with trespassing. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome aboard 4th of State Radio. This week, it's almost Easter for you guys. It's Easter here. My name's John Fox in Sydney, Australia. And over on the other side of the planet, not in North Carolina this week, but off in California, is Bruce Birch. How you going, buddy?
I'm doing great, John. How are you doing tonight, man?
It was a little dicey there as we were getting connected. And I'm glad that we made it in time, because I think we're going to have an interesting program this evening.
I think we are going to have an interesting program. And, you know, I just want to tell you, man, flying out here to California today was a fantastic experience. You want me to share some of that with you, John?
Yeah, please do. Please do. Please do.
Well, you know, I got up to the airports. You know, I had mentioned last week that I was flying out. I was going to be doing the show from out here this week. And one of the things that I had mentioned on the radio show was the fact that I was kind of concerned about the Homeland Security thing and, you know, being on the fly list. And what ended up happening was I get up to the airport screener desk there at 5:30 this morning, you know, and there's nobody there, right? I mean, there's like one guy.
Oh, really?
And me. And I'm thinking this could be a good thing. I could get right through and get on that. And then I thought, wait a minute, there's only one guy and me. That means that he could really make my life a living hell.
Right.
But what he did was, you know, I mentioned to him that I had radio broadcasting equipment, and he said, really? And I said, yeah, I do political talk radio, and he rushed me through out of his way. So that was great. And then, John, I spent half the flight from Chicago to California covered in 7-Up. So.
how did that happen?
Well, to be quite honest with you, this wonderful lady, you know, it was very hot on the airplane. You know, they didn't have the AC up very much, and so she poured her ice cold 7-Up on me. I watched her drink about 5 screwdrivers, and then she decided to throw a drink on me. I don't know what it was.
do you reckon she was a conservative and she could just smell the progressive?
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. I wasn't even wearing patchouli.
Oh, right. Just before you go on, I just got to, you know, it's, you know, the kind of like a big holiday weekend in a lot of faiths, you know, whether it's Easter, blah, 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 whatever. And I hope everybody's having a good time. And those of you that are observing the fertility festival, you know what to do.
The fertility festival?
Well, that was like the pagan. You know, the Easter was just put over the fertility festival. You know,
I didn't hear about this.
Oh, Gail and I are kind of checking it all out. You know how. Oh, well, you know, we'll be checking that out later, but that's too much information for the broadcast. Anyway.
The fertility festival, huh?
Well,
it has its roots in paganism, and paganism is that's like Satanists, right?
Well, that's what some people would like you to believe, but other people think that it's, you know, there are those of us, maybe, that believe that maybe it's a bit more, I don't know, not quite so scary, and maybe has some better groundings than some other religions that take up a lot of airtime. But anyway,
any religion that promotes Easter bunnies crapping chocolate eggs to me is just wrong. It's just freaking wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent there, because we've got heaps to do, and I'm glad to know that just throwing out "Hi, I do political talk radio" ended up hopefully being something that evaded you some difficulty and got you to your first off-the-flight bevy a little quicker than if you had not said such a thing.
Well, you know, one would think that that was the case. I really don't know. I mean, you know, the guy might have been, it might have been break time for all I know. You know, 5:30 in the morning, I'm serious, there was like me and two other people in the entire freaking airport, right? there was the guy sweeping the floor, and then there's the TSA guy, you know, he's like,
right.
He's got his little Playboy over there. And
I'm curious about how that would all go, you know, in this modern day. And, you know, there's been a lot of stuff this week, you know.
How much stuff, John?
It just kind of goes on and on and on and on and on. But
wait a minute.
What?
Where are we chatting, John?
Ah! Man, we haven't done any housekeeping yet. I was still getting my head around the fact that we got connected before launch, and that you're in California. You know, you're actually closer to me than you've ever been.
And my heart's all a flutter.
Woo! Anyway, we are, as usual, chatting at the Head On Radio Network chat room, and you just head on over to the headonradionetwork.com website, click on the chat room link. There's a quick little registration. You can dive straight into the pool. We got a bunch of good friends over there that, you know, chat about us, make fun of us, and keep us in line. And we're being streamed on the White Rose Society. Thank you, Ben Birch. His fundraiser has exceeded his goal. However, that doesn't mean that when you have an extra $5-$10 that you don't need, that you couldn't use it. So I'm glad that everybody dug deep and got him over his quota, as shall we say, that he wanted to hit. The show is being produced at the Head On Radio Network flagship studios in West Virginia by Bob and Agnes Kincaid. I don't even know where to start, but later in the show, you have a guest, don't you?
I certainly do.
Will have a guest, but you're the guy who nabbed him.
Well, you know, I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, John, and I think we came to the conclusion that I am that the guest gods love me. Because I tried to get Kurt Vonnegut. He did send his best wishes and listened to one of our shows and is behind us 100%. But his health precludes him from being on there on our radio program.
Right.
Maybe sometime in the near future. But tonight, later on after the 12 o'clock hour on the East Coast, 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, 9 o'clock on the West Coast. I don't even know what the hell time. I mean, dude. I went ahead in time, and now I'm feeling I'm going back in time. I just, you know, I'm just a time traveler. Anyway, we will have David Rovics on the radio program later on this evening. David is a singer-songwriter. You can check out his music at davidrovics.com. Amazing musician, amazing songwriter, writes songs about peace and justice and progressive politics. So we will have him on later on the program. He will actually be leaving a concert and will be calling right in right as soon as the show is over.
Oh.
So it should be an interesting time.
Right on. And you CC'd me a bit of the email exchange you had, and I loved his little line that he had in the email, something about, you know, thanks for using my stuff and feel free to use any of the rest of it, and don't worry about any money because it's all copylefted.
Copy left.
That's
that's some of that commie stuff, isn't it?
Well, it all depends on how you feel about commie. Anyway, we're about 2 minutes from hitting our first break, and aside from that, what I kind of thought that we'd do after we talk about a few things here and there will be we want to open up the phone lines. There's been a lot of talk and whatnot about this Loose Change film that's been going around, which kind of takes very much issue with the official line on what happened to what happened on 9/11. And Gail and I watched this thing last night, and I know you watched it. And I'm thinking that a little bit later in the show, we're going to open up the phone lines and 1-877-4 head on. We want to talk about how everybody feels about, do you believe the government line? And if not, what do you think happened? If you don't...
I think it was the Easter Bunny.
Hey, man.
Okay, I'll be quiet.
Well, you know, if you look at some things, you know, and you look at the tape where supposedly, you know, Osama took responsibility, sure doesn't look like any of the other five Osamas that we've seen in video. And, you know, it might as well be the Easter Bunny. You know, it might as well be aliens. And a little bit later, I'm also going to play some audio from the film V for Vendetta, which Gail and I went to see this weekend. And I'll tell you what, leave it to a comic book to just show you what can happen. And I reckon that this is a brilliant, brilliant film. Great ride. I mean, even if you're just into comic books.
You're talking about V for Vendetta, right?
V for Vendetta. What a fantastic film. And this basically shows, a government gone completely corrupt. And it takes place in the future, and they actually refer to the former United States being in civil war. And this only takes place, a few decades in our future, and the UK or Britain is now the supreme power on the planet. And it's very, very interesting. Anyway, I'm hearing some music. So, Bruce, we got to take a break. We're blogging at headonradionetwork.com and fourthestateradio.com. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to talk about stuff and take your calls and everything else. So we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of manicanism, and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper, and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight manicanism.
Protect yourself from manicanism. Log on to fightmanicanism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, my buddy pal, John Fox, down under over there. John, how far are you away from the Harbor Bridge?
About, 10, 15 kilometers or something. About 10
exactly
miles.
Exactly what, thank you. I was going to say, what's a kilometer? I never heard of that before. We were talking, before we went to the break, we were talking about all kinds of things, but we were talking about the whole 9/11 kerfluffle.
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you
that word up.
Yeah, kerfluffle. Now did you have a direction that you were gonna head that you're gonna bounce off to there, Bruce?
No, John, because you know, I think you have plenty of directions to bounce off into. I think my job is to serve as the bounced. Or bouncer, maybe bouncy.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. I was watching Least Change last night, and it seemed to me to be a more in-depth, better version of In Plain Sight, which was, you know, a pretty low-budget thing, but it was just saying, you know, here's a bunch of footage that you saw on that day. What do you reckon? And, you know, there's lots of talk about a lot of different things. But the thing that really, really, really has me asking some serious, serious questions, man, on the footage in that film that they obviously spent a whole lot of time cleaning up, there is that whole aspect of those small, controlled explosions just a few floors below the collapsing point of each of the Twin Towers. And you can see where, and the fact that it's not that it just happened once. It happens over and over and over as the building collapses.
Okay.
And you know, when I first see it, I go, okay, there's, you know, some sort of pressure thing, you know, via the elevator, you know, shaft or something, and so it's blown out that window. But then, in one of the bits of footage, you're seeing one of the towers from, like, corner on. And you watch on two sides simultaneously windows blow out on adjacent corner windows that look like something was detonated on the floor back, you know, say, you know, a few meters either direction. You can just see, like, from one point, two windows on two adjacent sides just blew straight out. And it's so controlled, and you watch it, that it's all of a sudden a few floors down as it continues to go, and bang, the same thing's happened underneath there. And, you know, I'd like to deal in facts and science, you know, and Ben Birch has started many a kerfuffle, you know, over at Democratic Underground, because he looks at the physics and whatnot, and he'll take issue with some of the things that I'm saying right here. And we've talked about it at length, because my thing is that I don't have any answers, but we still haven't had an honest investigation into what went on anyway, you know. And as far as that film seems, this most recent film seems to say, is that there are like 9 of the hijackers that are like alive and well and back home doing their regular gigs.
That's a lot of assertions there, John. What kind of evidence do you have to back any of that up?
Well, okay, there's you know, one of the things that we're told to believe is that because of the fuel fire, we were able to take a steel core building down due to the fact of, you know, getting enough heat to start the process, and then the whole thing came down on itself. Where some of Ben's math that he's thrown out absolutely backs up that if you were able to start the process of paraphrasing and remembering back to this thread, you know, I think it was, you know, if this process had started, then there would be friction-related heat as the thing came down. Now, the problem that I have is the steel that built that building was tested to withstand many, many hours at over 2,000 degrees. And that type of kerosene fire will hardly break 1,000. And in the second, in the tower that was hit second, most of that fuel was expended outside the building in a huge cloud. So pulling all that in, what they're telling me to me doesn't add up at all. Now, I might have a bit better time believing it maybe, even if I forgive the melting temperature of the steel, okay, if it was hit really, really straight on and the entirety of the fuel load actually burned inside the building, I may have a little bit more ability to believe the government line, okay? And like I'm saying, I don't have the answers, right? But seriously, I have more and more questions as time goes on. I have less and less answers because we're not getting a straight story. We never have gotten a straight story. And as we know, during the 9/11 investigations that went on, Bush, Cheney, all these people, and remember, Bush's brother was the head of security at the Twin Towers up until 9/11. It worries me, man. So anyway, we're gonna pick this up on the other side of the break, Bruce, and see where we go with this. And we're taking your calls at 1-877-4 head on. And this is John Fox. Bruce Birch is in California.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel. Not only their feed, small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Introducing Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and that's my pal, my buddy, my friend, John Fox, Down Under. John, you still with us here?
G'day, mate.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I heard your argument. I heard your argument, the whole situation with the windows exploding outward and the corners exploding, and then there was, what was the other one, about the heat?
Well, yeah. I mean, even what's the over bloody? What's the testing authority that handles these kind of things that actually accredited the steel? You know, they said that they do not see how the government line flows because there is no way that steel would have melted in those conditions. I mean, as far as they were concerned. It was nowhere even near, and we've seen buildings made of the same kind of steel
not
burn for hours, almost days, almost an entire day, and never come down.
Well, you know, in Loose Change, and I watched that video also, and in Loose Change it detailed, I think it was 20 different buildings that caught on fire. Each one of those buildings withstood the fires. Two of them were in fact identically designed to the World Trade Center and did not fall. But there's a difference between having a fire and having a jet airplane crash into the building going 400 miles an hour. Don't you think there's a?
I do, Bruce. I definitely do. Okay. However, the Twin Towers were designed to take a pretty severe hit. And I don't remember if they were actually supposed to be able to withstand a hit like this. But if you just, you know, I, in my silly little world of being, you know, an audio engineer, most of my life dealt with physics, no matter how esoteric the end result was. You can't break the laws of physics. And there's a certain part of me that says, okay, if the plane had been hit, say, down at, say, the 40th floor, instead of way up in less than the last, 20% of the entire guts of the building?
Right.
Okay? So, and also the other thing is, if it had been from the explosion that set the thing happening, wouldn't you think then, when you've ever watched anything break, crumble, whatever, wouldn't you think that it would have been more like a hat tipping down and the top of the building actually coming more down the side as opposed to the entire thing just seeming to crumble into a pile of dust? Because it was only hit on one side. Either building was only ever hit on one side, right? So that plane never made it to the other side, right? It never made it to actually break the structural integrity of the building somewhere near its center of gravity as far as its central point. So I would see it would have to top to one side as it started to cave, because there would be more weight strain towards the side of the building where it was hit, because you'd have more integral strength, especially the one that was hit more in the corner, because you'd almost have a full triangle, which is the strongest geometric form there is, as the other half of that tower. And I mean, I've been watching this footage, and I can't go off and say that, you know, George Bush did this, because that would be ridiculous, because I have nothing to back it up with. However, I have a whole lot of connections to his interests and whatnot, and the fact that, you know, his dad was partying with Bin Laden on the very morning. And, you know, the fact that we had Saudis smoking cigars the same night with Bush as the smoke was still settling coming out of the towers. So, you know, I just really don't know, you know, what to do. But guess what, man? It looks like we have CB on the line. CB, you there?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. You're on my subject. I had to call.
I knew you'd ring.
I was about to say, wait, did you guys need to talk to me? Ask me all the questions you want. Yes, you cannot defy the laws of physics. No way would those buildings have come down that fast if it was the pancaking, they're saying. No way.
Okay, so you're seeing what I'm seeing, that, you know, you just follow, you know, if anyone who at least still grew up in a time where we actually had some science in the classroom, and
right,
even just touched on the beginnings of motion physics, that there's so much of this that I have to say something, it wasn't what they're saying it is.
Yeah, and even people that actually, they don't need an education in physics. Life is an education in physics. If the impact had done it, at least the top part of the building would have fallen over sideways, not down into its footprint.
Right.
The concrete being powderized the way it was is definite explosive, not pancaking. There would have been big chunks. There weren't very many big chunks. It was all powderized. People are getting sick from that god-awful, and the pyroclastic flow was just, it was really fast. It just went flying away from there with way too much speed.
And one thing that really bothers me, CB, why were the bodies dumped on a landfill, and why was all the debris just taken off and melted?
Right. That's against the law to take evidence away like that before it's been cleared, and it hadn't been cleared. There was no investigation into it. The three buildings had been closed down for some kind of security drills and stuff in the couple of weeks before 9/11. The bomb sniffing dogs have been taken away. Marvin Bush, the president's brother, was in charge of security for the World Trade Center. I mean,
yeah, that's got to make you wonder.
Yeah, there are a million reasons to wonder. But the thing that I think is most illustrative is those buildings came down in just a hair over free fall speed, all three of them. You know, one,
just
two, and seven.
Over what? Say that again, CB.
They came down in just a hair over free fall speed. In other words, if you'd have dropped a baseball off the top of the World Trade Center, it would have beat the World Trade Center down by less than a second. There's resistance. If weight is making it pancake down, there would be resistance at each floor. It would have taken radically longer than 10 seconds for them to fall. And free fall speed was 9.2 seconds.
But doesn't the weight, the exponentially become more powerful as it picks up?
Even
speed
it,
going
it
down?
Doesn't make it go faster than free fall, and when something is impeding it, even if it's only for a very short period of time, it would have, being really generous, it would have at least doubled the time for them to collapse. And that's
terminal
that's
velocity is terminal
apparent.
Velocity.
What?
Terminal velocity is terminal velocity. You
right.
can't get any faster. Weight has nothing to do with it.
Right.
And any effect on it is only something that will slow it down or impede it.
Right.
So if it had been, as you're saying, Stevie, if it had been this pancake fall, it should have taken probably at least another good second or two.
Oh,
easy.
Easy. No, more like 60 seconds, you know. Cut that in half. Cut that in a quarter. You still don't
yeah.
come, you know. And there's another bit of information I just learned recently that's fairly interesting. There were like 16 survivors of the actual collapses, and they were, I think, in between the third floor and the 15th floor or something like that, in one of the stairwells in one of the buildings. And they think the reason these guys actually survived is the charges did not go off in that section, and they ended up on top of the rubble as opposed to underneath it. And there was, you know, like 100 floors above them that came down, and yet they ended up on top of the rubble. That's another thing that absolutely says can't have been a pancake.
And the other thing, too, that and Bruce, you saw the film, too, that really has me asking.
It's hard to refute that.
I
don't know that I can refute that.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, Bruce, is that when the planes first hit and you still had actually, you know, emergency personnel going into the trade centers, there was damage and rubble in the lobbies. Okay? The planes hit way up there. Why is there going to be rubble down below unless there had been charges set off?
Plus all the people who report hearing the explosions and being and, you know, feeling the blast of the explosions. The people who survived that I just mentioned said there was an intense wind coming up the stairwell. Not down it, but up it when the collapse was happening. There's just overwhelming evidence that it did not come down like the 9/11 Commission report said. Underwriters Laboratories was the place you guys.
Thank you. That's yeah. who I couldn't think of earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And that guy got fired for telling
right
the truth.
Right after that.
He wrote a letter saying, "Wait, no way, Jose, could this happen to this steel?" And he got fired for it. So, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. And the physicists, there's this great organization that's getting bigger and bigger. The physicists and, you know, other scientists out there are joining together, and they've got, you know, they've got a page. Oh, what is it? ST911.org.
SP?
That's Scholars for Truth. Scholars for 9/11 Truth is what their name is. And it's just packed with articles, videos, you know, and anybody who watches or goes and looks at all this information on there can figure it out for themselves. They don't have to believe a word we're saying. They can just look at all the evidence. And it's overwhelming. You know, I tried very hard not to be a conspiracy theorist. But like we're given to saying now, the real conspiracy theory is that 19 guys with box cutters could have done that.
it's kind of like, you know, the Easter Bunny is more plausible than
exactly
than what they're telling me.
And
like you said, all the witnesses that talked about explosions, the one of the bits of footage that I can never get out of my head is those three or four firefighters back in the station house, and the one guy's just gone, no, it was like a controlled demolition. Boom, 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 boom.
Well, we were also shocked while we were watching it, but, you know, everybody was saying, even as we were watching it, this is like a controlled demolition. Well, it's not like one.
Yeah.
It is one. Because all buildings that fall over or come down fall over. And I mean, that's why they have the controlled demolition thing, to keep it from doing that. They put strategically placed charges to make them drop into their own footprint.
And it minimized the damage to other buildings and whatnot.
Exactly.
They took out exactly what they wanted. And I mean, we're still talking about the Twin Towers. We haven't even started talking about the nonsense, as far as I'm concerned, is the explanation of the Pentagon.
Oh, I know. That one is
I've got a question, though. I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. So someone sets charges in the World Trade Center, two of the largest buildings in the world. Okay.
Ten guys, 10 days.
10 guys, 10 days?
Yep. Some people say it would take 4,000.
10 guys, 10 days. And if they're working 8 hours a day to do it.
The building was closed down for all that time, you know, at nighttime. And also there was a very convenient electrical outage. So there was no, you know, pictures of what was going on inside that building. It would have taken, they say, either 10 guys, 10 days or 10 guys at 40 pounds a pop. It would only take a few days to do it, and it wouldn't take any more than 10 men to do it. It could, and it, in fact, could have been fewer than 10.
Right. So, CB, we're about to come up on a break, but do you want to hold on through the break?
Sure, sure.
Okay, because I'm really glad that you were caller number one on this thing today. So I'll tell you what, why don't we go ahead and get into that break so we can come back and have as long a segment as possible with CB on the line and Bruce, myself, talking about 9/11 and whether you believe what they're telling you to believe. And so far, CB and I are on the same page, and Bruce, I think, is looking for something to counter with at the moment, but... Anyway, we're going to be back very, very shortly after this break with CB, John Fox, and Bruce on Fourth State Radio.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio.
No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch. My buddy John Fox is over there spinning tails. No, he's not. CB is on the line with us also. CB from California, one of our fantastic listeners. CB, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
You mentioned before we went into the break, you mentioned the fact that the building was shut down at night and that there were power outages. Is that correct? I mean, what was it? In what time period leading up to 9/11 was this?
It just in the weeks immediately preceding 9/11.
And Marvin Bush was the head of security for, or what was the,
yep,
what was the security company?
Oh, I can't remember the name of the company, but Marvin Bush was one of the directors of the company.
Okay, and now when they
straight after 9/11, did he not?
Well, yeah, because there was no World Trade Center left.
Well, yeah, but it all just seemed to kind of, you know.
Yes.
You never heard about it.
Yeah, we never heard about it. That isn't mentioned by the officials out there. There's just overwhelming evidence that it was an inside job. And when you get over to the what we have on the Pentagon, that just defies description. I mean, at the time it happened, we were looking at the pictures. Everybody saw the pictures of it, and the hole was not big enough for that plane to have gone through there. And the roof had stayed on. There was like a 16.
The tail section would have at least messed with that in some way, shape, or form.
And the pristine lawn, there was no skidding and scrunching into the lawn, nothing. And they're saying that this fellow who could barely fly a plane at all could have done this fabulous maneuver into the side of the Pentagon. But doesn't matter because they're just physically, it cannot have been, what was it, a 757 that they said? It can't have been that.
I do believe. Now, CB, let me just cut in before we get moving completely on into the Pentagon.
Okay.
Now, there was one thing that we didn't even bring up about what happened in New York City. And it wasn't – I don't believe it was in the Loose Change film, but I do remember actually reporting this on our blog at the time, that the F-15 squad that usually reacts to planes that drop their transponders or go off course – to intercept and either force to communicate.
Right.
Land.